You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Her Money is proudly sponsored by Edelman Financial Engines. When life gives us a financial windfall, first comes gratitude. Then comes financial planning. Because being empowered with our money is everything. To learn more, visit planefe.com/hermoney and schedule your complimentary wealth checkup today.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So the number one gift you can give to yourself in 2024 financially with Her Money is stop rolling a balance, pay off your credit cards, do what you actually need to do to get out of debt as much as possible, and you'll have a much better year.
Hey everybody, I'm Jean Chatsky. Thank you so much for joining me today on Her Money. So the new year is a time when many of us, me included, when many of us take a minute to reflect on how we did over the past year, maybe start planning out our goals, whether or not we call them resolutions for the future. On this podcast in 2023, we spent a whole lot of time talking and thinking about how to make our work lives and our home lives a little more fulfilling. We talked to Simone Stoltzoff about working to live instead of living to work, and with Gretchen Rubin about finding more joy in the more mundane moments through our senses. Elise Lunan taught us how to do away with our perfectionist tendencies. Some of us are still working on that. And that's because recently, we know Americans have been reevaluating how important it is to seek out joy in our careers and at home. A Gallup poll from 2022 indicated that Americans were going through an unhappiness crisis, that we were the unhappiest that we had ever been post-pandemic. According to 2023 data, those numbers are actually inching upwards. The World Happiness Report says that the U.S. is now the 15th happiest country overall, slightly higher than the 16th happiest country, which is the position that we held last year. So we figured let's try to keep those good vibes going. Let's try to start 2024 with a clean slate and a happiness reset. And who better to do that with than Arthur Brooks, the William Henry Bloomberg Professor at the Kennedy Harvard School and the author of so many best-selling books, including his most recent title, Build the Life You Want, The Art and Science of Getting Happier, which he wrote, of course, with co-author Oprah Winfrey. Arthur, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks, Jean. Great to be with you. And I'm delighted to talk about how we can make 2024 even better than 2023.
So you are our first episode of the new year, which I think is great. I always love to try to start each year off. This is our seventh year, and I always try to start each year off with, you know, a little bit of a zest, right? A little bit of a oomph that gets us moving in the right direction. How do you feel about New Year's and New Year's resolutions and this feeling of a fresh start?
I've actually looked at New Year's resolutions as a social scientist a bunch. And, you know, why is it that people are always flunking their New Year's resolution or are abandoning their New Year's resolutions? The vast majority of resolutions don't even make it out of the month of January, is the bottom line. There aren't very many that make it to June, for sure. I mean, sometimes people do. I mean, there are resolutions that I made as a younger man that sometimes went through. But part of the reason is that we have such a hard time with them is because they seem great on their face, but they don't pass the cost-benefit test. So a diet resolution doesn't generally make it, or a workout resolution, because it's not worth it by February. It's worth it in the first week of January, but not worth it by February. We need to have resolutions that are better constructed around things that really endure in the reward they're going to give us. And that means we need to understand our happiness and what's going to bring it consistently over the long term and focus on those things.
As you think about happiness heading into 2024, and as you think about where the U.S. is right now, where people in this country and actually the world are right now, I mean, I have to admit, I have been talking to a lot of my friends who are kind of feeling a little glum about the state of our world. How do you think about the things outside and how they impact the happiness that we feel inside?
Well, one of the biggest mistakes that people make in happiness is thinking that they can't get happier until circumstances change. You know, I can't get happier until the economy gets better. I can't get happier until my health gets resolved or my relationship gets sunnier. And outside circumstances really do matter. But what matters a lot more is the way that we manage ourselves. By the way, there's one thing on the research on money about happiness, which is really interesting, which is that, you know, it all that matters is how you spend it. If whether you're going to get happier. And the one thing that brings you the greatest unhappiness is borrowing money, is owing money. It's horrible.
It's debt
is horrible. There's only one kind of debt that won't bring down your happiness, and that's mortgage debt. And the reason for that is it actually making progress because you're not paying rent, because it actually is an investment, is how most people see it. Student debt's bad for your happiness. Auto debt is terrible for your happiness. And worst of all is credit card debt. Credit card debt is the worst. So the number one gift you can give to yourself in 2024 financially with her money is stop rolling a balance, pay off your credit cards, do what you actually need to do to get out of debt as much as possible, and you'll have a much better year.
What I love about the way that you frame that is that it's not about the economy. It's about your personal economy. And there's a lot in whether we're talking about your financial life or your social life or your work life, there's a lot that you can control. And we don't tend to think about it that way when we think about the world around us.
Yeah. Part of the problem is that the world tells us that we don't have responsibility. The world delivers all kinds of messages about how we're victims of everything. I mean, that's just the modern world. I mean, I sit on a college campus and, you know, the college kids are being exposed all the time to the idea that you're a victim. You should be really mad and aggrieved, and the world's got to change. And if you demonstrate angrily enough, things are going to get better. And so people are having this huge meltdowns in their mental health while carrying a sign down the street. And it's like, whoa, 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 whoa. That's like waiting for the economy to get better while you're running a credit card balance. Let's talk about what you actually need to do to improve your own well-being. And then we can talk about how to make the world better. But you're going to be a mess and not helpful to anybody as long as you're miserable.
So when we start to try to make our own happiness levels better, when we start to just try to have a better day more often than not, where's the place to start in life?
The place to start in life is to do a little bit of a census on what's going on. You know, the same way that you'd make a budget. And once you start making a budget, people kind of find out all kinds of stuff. I was like, wait a second, I'm spending how much on restaurants? Really? Really? A DoorDash is costing me how much per month? That's one of the things that people find out about a lot. When you do a little census across your behaviors, you're going to find out what the biggest problems are. Now, to start off with the habits, the portfolio of habits of the happiest people, where they put a deposit every year. This is kind of your happiness 401k. It really only has four accounts that you need to put a deposit in every day, and you can't neglect: your faith, your family, your friendship, and your work. And so you got to understand what each one of these actually mean in your life. They don't mean the same thing in everybody's life, by the way. I'm Catholic on the faith side. I really love it. Most important thing in my life. But as a social scientist, I can tell you there's lots of ways to actually put a deposit in that account. Maybe it's religion, maybe it's not religion. It's just a placeholder for something transcendent to the tedious psychodrama that's your ongoing life every day. You need, maybe it's studying Stoic philosophy or walking in nature or meditating, or you gotta have a practice of something. So ask yourself, am I neglecting my spiritual and philosophical and religious life? Am I neglecting it? If the answer is yes, Congratulations. You found a place where you can actually start making real goals and real progress in 2024. The second is family. How is my family life? Am I cultivating my family life, or am I just too busy? Or even worse, have I allowed some culture warrior in the media or academia or politics to convince me to cut off relationships with family members because of disagreements? Don't let it happen. Don't let it happen. They're not out to help you. They're out to, you know, feather their own nests. Patch up these relationships. Make sure that you take the time, because these are very mystical love relationships. We didn't choose them. God knows we wouldn't have chosen them in so many cases, but they're very important to our happiness. The third is friendship. And for a lot of people who listen to this podcast, they're hard workers. You know, they're really hard workers. Yeah. And the problem for strivers is they have a lot of deal friends, but not too many real friends. And we know the difference between real and deal. And only real friends bring you happiness. Deal friends are great, but they're not going to bring you happiness because they're useful, right? They're useful for something else. Real friends are useless. And they take time and they take effort. If you don't have enough real friends, congratulations. You just found something in your budget that you can change. And last but not least is your work. And your work is not about money. It isn't. I mean, you have to have enough money. I got it. But money's just a measuring stick once you get beyond, you know, your daily needs. The real things that we need to be focusing on in our work are earning our success, creating value with our lives and being rewarded for it, and serving other people. Are you doing that or not? Are the people who work for you doing that or not? You wonder why you have a churn problem and people keep quitting their jobs because they don't have those things, is what it comes down to. And so that's the things for us to keep in mind and where we can actually start with our New Year's resolutions for 2024, faith, family, friends, and work.
So can we just pull those apart a little bit? Because I think there are people who are listening and realizing they have a deficit in one or more, but aren't exactly sure where to start when it comes to the rebuilding process. And, you know, for me, faith would probably be the hardest one of these to figure out, right? I'm Jewish by faith. I keep traditions. It's not a transcendent thing for me. And we moved to a new city a couple of years ago, don't belong to a congregation. So it's matzo ball soup is basically my Judaism. When I think about a practice, I don't really have one, but my husband just went through the mindfulness class at Penn and is now meditating 20, 30 minutes a day. I'm feeling a little envious, actually.
A little left out, huh? Yeah, I know. It's great. And I'm a long, long, long time meditator. I know the benefits of that, but I also know that's a hard thing to start doing. Here's what I would recommend for anybody who wants to start in on that in 2024. The first resolution to make. You know, it's like, I'm not going to be a meditator. What I would recommend is reading 15 minutes a day. Anybody can do that. Now, what I mean by reading 15 minutes a day is I don't mean reading a comic book 15 minutes a day. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about surfing the internet or reading the New York Times, which will just make you insane. That's not what I'm talking about. The wisdom literature. I'm talking about deeper things, the things you've always wanted to read. Zen and the Art of Archery. The Art of Happiness by the Dalai Lama, Torah. These are things that I bet you, Gene, that even though you're not religious in your Judaism, I bet you wish you knew the Torah better, is my guess. And so the idea of carefully reading the book of Exodus with a commentary, just 15 minutes a day, it's going to blow your mind. And it's this window into the transcendent that you didn't know was available. And also it makes you smarter. And you won't be able to stop talking about it. It's just open your heart a little bit to wisdom greater than that which we have. And I really, really recommend everybody listening to us start with your own tradition. You don't need to go, you know, three states over to get your groceries. Go to the local supermarket and get your groceries, because I guarantee you, some people have no tradition at all. Okay, that's fine. Then read Dostoevsky's, Brothers Karamazov. That's a good place to start. But for everybody who was raised in a Christian or Muslim or Jewish or Buddhist or Hindu tradition, go back to your own roots and read them with fresh eyes, and it's going to rock your world.
Okay. All right. I'm gonna do that. I'm going to start there. With family, if you've experienced a rift in your family and you want to start to repair that, what's step number one?
Step number one is disregard the drama. If there's been a rift, and this has happened a lot, you know, 11% of mothers who have adult children are not speaking to at least one of their children. Not speaking. Can you imagine? I mean, Gene, you have kids, right?
I've got kids. Yeah. Cannot imagine.
awful, right? I mean, I have adult kids and I literally FaceTime with them every day. But, you know, I didn't have a close relationship with my parents. It wasn't bad. It was just kind of cordial. And I remember thinking, they're such interesting people. I mean, my father was a mathematician. My mother was an artist. They were really serious intellectuals. And I thought, I got to get to know them. But I was doing my thing. I was living in Europe. And then they died young. And it was too late, right? So the whole point is that what I needed to do was to not be like, Mom, Dad, I want to get to know you. No. Just make contact and make it non-dramatic. For somebody with whom you've had a rift or somebody with whom you just haven't talked in a long time, just like, I saw this really funny thing in the internet. I thought you might laugh. Little stuff like that, just little things, just occasional texts and emails, and just don't go to the heart of the matter. It's not that important. And what you're going to find is that almost certainly the other person is like, man, I love talking to Gene. I really do. And I didn't remember how much I enjoyed, how much we laughed together, right? Go to the laughter, not the crying first.
I have discovered, because I'm living in this new city, that building friendships takes some work. I joined a non-book book group because my friend who started it had dropped out of too many book groups because she didn't read the book and she didn't want to cook. So she's formed a group and we go to restaurants and we have a really, really nice time. And I've started to reach out to some of the women individually to get to know them a little bit better. But it's, you know, you have to commit to doing this. That's what friendship is.
So real friendship requires real work. Deal friendship doesn't require real work. Deal friendship is show up to work and they're in the cube next to you and you're nice to each other. But you actually don't know if the person has a happy marriage. You don't know if how many children they have or what their names are. That's not the same thing, and that won't bring you the authentic happiness. Now, when you move, it's interesting because we have a technique. My wife, Esther, and I, we moved 20 times in the last 32 years.
Oh,
we've moved a lot. So what do you do under those circumstances? Well, almost everybody who's in the new city, they have all their own friends, and it doesn't occur to them that you might be lonely. So the way to do it is to pretend you've lived in a place for 10 years already and start inviting people over. By your second week living in a new place, start having people over for dinner at your house. And these are people that you'll find out that's like, you know, we probably haven't had dinner out 5 times in the past 5 years, is what you'll find, because they're so busy. You know, they're kind of doing their thing and they're like, this is awesome. And what you're doing is you're opening up their hearts in a time where they were just so ingrained in their habits. So pretend you've lived there for a long time. You know, join a local temple, or at least go and start talking to people and say, hey, would you like to come over to my place and have coffee? And they'll be like, met a new person. They invited me over. They must be really hospitable. No, they're actually lonely, but they don't know that.
That's perfect. That's perfect. And I'm sure that it works even if you've been in the same place for a long time. You invite somebody over, you know, you're making their life easier. And what I've discovered, and I like to cook, but I'm by no means like the best cook on the planet. You cook for somebody, they're not complaining. Right? They are just happy to be fed.
Yeah, absolutely.
In terms of the work factor, and I think you're right about this audience. I think there's a lot of people in my audience who strive and who work really, really hard sometimes to our own detriment. How do you flip the switch on that?
Well, to begin with, Mother Nature puts some false information into the human genome. We're all programmed with the idea that if we get these worldly rewards like money and power and the admiration of others through work, that we'll be automatically happy. And so what you need to do is to get those rewards and then happiness will come along for free. You know, intellectually, that's not true. And your grandmother told you it wasn't true. But you always kind of think that. And so the result is that strivers, they got to strive and they're working for these particular rewards. The only way to work against that is not to stop striving. And it wouldn't even matter if I did say stop striving. Nobody in your audience is going to stop. You're going to do the work you're actually going to do. But at the same time, it's striving and focusing in a different way on what actually matters. So to say to yourself, where am I actually earning my success? Where am I most earning my success? Where am I creating the most value? And focusing on the areas where you feel like you're creating the most value, not necessarily economic value, where you're creating the most impact. And second is, am I helping somebody to live a better life? Am I lightening their load? Just thinking about those two questions, putting yourself in a position to do those two things is so important. I mean, I've had a lot of career changes in my life. I was a professional musician for a long time, then I was a professor for a long time, and then I was a CEO for 11 years, and now I'm back to writing, speaking, and teaching, but I have my own company, and I'm, you know, traveling around doing 175 talks and, you know, writing books and all that. And the last, you know, I was 55 when I made my last career change. And I thought to myself, you know, this is what I do for a living now. What am I actually going to do? And so I rewrote my mission statement in life for my work. To be, I'm going to spend the rest of my life lifting people up and bringing them together in bonds of happiness and love using science and ideas. Why? Because I want to earn my success and serve other people. And at the same time, by the way, it's, you know, it's people pay me. It's the craziest thing I've ever heard. I mean, it's like I'm working for a living at the same time. But those are the two rewards that are really going to endure. But you got to pay attention to it.
You talked a little bit earlier about happiness and money and how they're linked and how they're not. I want to dig into that a little more, particularly the spending side of the equation that you talked about. But before we do that, just a quick announcement. The Her Money Podcast is now on YouTube. Yeah, so don't forget to subscribe to our channel. It's at Her Money. You'll get notified about all the new episodes. And you can tell me what you think about those episodes in the comments. Believe me, I am reading. We're going to take a quick break. Her Money is proudly sponsored by Edelman Financial Engines. We save and invest for our financial futures because we know that even though the future may be uncertain, planning is everything. Sometimes in life, we enjoy financial windfalls too. We may gain an inheritance, liquidate a business, or receive a monetary gift or a settlement. Even in these days of more Mega Million jackpots than ever, we may win the lottery. When this happens, we all want to make the most out of every dollar we've been given, and we can. Learn more at planefe.com/hermoney and schedule your complimentary wealth checkup today. And we are back with Arthur Brooks, author of Build the Life You Want. So, spending and happiness, money and happiness. There's so much research on money and happiness and whether or not there's a level of diminishing marginal returns once you get to a certain level. But I don't think I've heard it tied so directly before to spending. So tell me what you mean.
Yeah, a lot of people think that I'll be happier when I have a lot of money. That's wrong. It has everything to do with how you dispose of the money. And there's only five things that you can do with the money. Good news. Four of those things will literally buy happiness. Four of those things. Bad news. The one thing that doesn't is the thing you always do. So here's the thing that people do that think that it's going to bring them happiness and doesn't. Buying junk. Buying stuff. Right? I mean, there's stuff that you need. You need a house. You need a car. You need groceries. And quite frankly, you do need to go on vacation. But the whole idea that the car is going to bring you this enduring source of joy, you know perfectly that's not right. The new car smell wears off. That you're going to like live in this house and go, it's so great. There's only one way that house is going to bring you enduring happiness. And that depends on who comes there and who's living in it with you is what it comes down to. That watch, it's an awesome watch. I got that. But it's not going to be an enduring source of your happiness. It's very evanescent, the spending part. And yet that's our tendency. And the reason for that has to do with evolution. Mother Nature has programmed into us that the more that we have an overt display of our conspicuous consumption, the more likely we are to be able to survive and pass on our genes and rise in the social hierarchy. It's true. If you drive a Porsche, you're higher in the social hierarchy, as sad as that is, compared to if you're driving a Toyota. But that doesn't bring you happiness. We know that because Mother Nature doesn't care if you're happy. Now what you can do, because I know, Gene, you want to know what you can do with the money that'll bring you happiness. Four things. Number one, buy experiences with the people you love. Buy time with the people you love is what it comes down to. Do things with people that you love. Go on vacation with the people that you love. That's what it comes down to. Because high quality experiences, you often think that it's going to wear off. You know, I've been married 32 years. And I went 31 years ago, right around this time, my wife and I were having this knockdown drag out fight about, ironically, how to spend our first wedding anniversary, right? Now we had $0 in our checking account. We had just enough money to do one of two things. We could go to the beach, which she really wanted to do. She's from Barcelona. She wanted to go to the beach for 3 days. Or we could buy a couch. And we didn't have a couch. And I'm like a thrifty, practical American, and she's a Spaniard. And so she's like, beach. And I'm like, no, couch. And we're going back and forth, beach, couch. Beach. And finally, we compromised, and we went to the beach. And that's why I've been married 32 years. But, you know, the funny thing about it is that we got a couch about 6 months later, right? And I don't even remember the couch. but I can tell you everything we did on that beach vacation. Why? Because it's imprinted on my heart in bonds of love. That's what matters. Buy experiences. That's number one. Number two, free up your time from the things that you don't like, but you have to spend the time, not frittering it away, you know, scrolling TikTok or watching Netflix. No. Spend it with the people that matter to you. So free up your time and spend it wisely. If you don't like cutting the grass and you've got the money to pay somebody to cut the grass, do that because you're creating a job for somebody, a good dignified job, and make sure you pay them well. And then use the time. Use the time with people that you love. That's number two, buy time. Number three is give it away. Find something that you love, a cause that you really care about. My wife and I, we give 10% of our income to charity every year. And we give 10% away because, you know, that's our religion says that's important to do. But also, you know, it's just incredible joy. We give money largely to people who can't afford to get religious education. And we pay for, you know, kids to get religious education. We really care about that a lot. And it means a lot to us. And that's a huge source of joy. Giving your time and money, especially your money away to things that really matter to you will bring joy. And last but not least, remember I said that borrowing money is reliably a source of unhappiness? Saving money is a reliable source of happiness.
I know, and people don't get it. And I think I realized this after I got divorced. I got divorced at 40. It was a terrible year. I lost my dad. I lost my job. I turned 40. Like, it was just all...
Yeah, that's a tough year. Tough
but
year.
I started saving like a crazy person to rebuild and realized how happy it made me to watch the balances in those accounts adding up. More happy than buying any new thing ever could.
Totally. And when you see your kids doing that, you know, it's like my son, who has been in the Marine Corps for the past 4 years, just got out. And when he was in the Marines, you know, when he got in, he was a knucklehead spending all his money. And by the time he was out, he was married, 23 years old, and he's married. And he started putting money away. And it's just like a light in his eyes. And he's like, yep, nope, no vacation for us this year. Got to put money in the 401k. And it just gives him a source of pride. And I know for young people, it's like, give me a break. Life is short. But you don't understand. Humans are wired to have happiness when they're making progress. And that's a tangible metric of progress for the future. And when you're older, I mean, I'm in my late 50s at this point, and I save money. I save tons of money because I want to create intergenerational wealth. I want to create possibilities. I want to be able to, you know, when my kid starts a company, I want to be able to help stake it. There's all kinds of stuff that I want to do. And it's sitting there as possibility and as proof to me that I'm making progress. I'm a happiness specialist and it still works for me. So that's the fourth thing to do. And people shouldn't miss out on it. Don't go the other direction, because when you borrow money, especially for consumer expenditures, the satisfaction you'll get from the purchase wears off and you'll be going backwards in your finances for a whole period of time as a result of paying off a loan. Interest to somebody else for a car that now has dents in it? No way.
One thing that I find very interesting about you is that you write that you are not naturally a happy person, that anxiousness and depression that runs in your family. How'd you get here?
I'm a social scientist, and I decided that I wanted to write about the thing I needed the most. You know, I wanted to crack the code because I didn't find anything especially compelling about how to use science to get happier. So I was going to actually do that myself. So, you know, I stepped back in my job as a chief executive and I went back to my roots. I mean, my PhD is in behavioral science. And I went back to that and started saying, all right, how do we use the science for that? So it's not research, Gene, it's me search. I'm a happiness specialist because I want to get happier. And I'm telling you, it works. It's the most amazing thing. I keep very careful metrics that I assign to my classes. We have very, very good validated measures, self-surveys that we can take to measure happiness. And so my students are taking it, so I take it year after year. And so I can watch my own progress. And since I've been doing this full time, sharing these ideas with others, my happiness is 60% higher than it was 5 years ago.
Wow. You write that you use a strategy of employing emotional caffeine. Can you explain that?
Yeah, so this is a metaphor, obviously. It's not as if there's something that you can drink that will suddenly make you happier. I don't recommend substances to make you happier. That's almost always a suboptimal strategy because it's a pleasure pursuit. And that's actually, pleasure is not one of the fundamental ingredients of happiness. It's not that substances are always bad, but they're not the secret, is the whole point. So emotional caffeine is the idea of emotional substitution. Caffeine is a very funny molecule because it's like a fake molecule, really. What it is it's shaped just like a neurotransmitter called adenosine that makes you feel more relaxed. And the adenosine molecules fit into a plug from one neuron to another, and that's how you know to become inhibited in your activity. The caffeine looks just like it, and so it goes into the parking places for the adenosine, which can't go into the neuron, so you can't actually relax. Caffeine doesn't pep you up. It doesn't let you relax, is really what's going on. That's how caffeine works. The metaphor is that when you have particular emotions that are appropriate to your circumstances, there's no good or bad feelings. There's only negative and positive emotions, all of which are very important to give you information. All emotional life is information that your brain is giving you about whether something should be avoided or approached. That's all emotions are. That doesn't mean they're fun, but that's what they all are. And sometimes there's more than one appropriate emotion. So what you can actually do is recognize, if you're conscious enough about the emotions that you're actually feeling, and choose another one to put in its place for the caffeine to go into the parking place of the adenosine. 2 weeks ago, I travel all the time, so the airlines are kind of nice as they can be, which is not that nice. And I was sitting in first class in the airplane. It's comfy. I'm going from Boston to Los Angeles, and it's spacious, and I'm getting my work done, the whole thing. And I remember, it's morning time. They give me one of those frittatas. And it's like cold. And I'm like, can you believe it? This is cold. Now, my natural emotion was resentment. But I said, emotional caffeine. What's another emotion I could be feeling right now that's also appropriate but better? And the answer is gratitude. I should be basically like, I feel really grateful to be sitting here and being really comfortable and getting my work done. And it's kind of funny just a minute ago that I was mad because of the temperature of the tortilla. And that was a conscious decision that comes from a process called metacognition, is managing our own emotions by thinking about our own emotions. Other examples of this are, for example, sadness can be substituted with humor. You find a lot of comedians, they tend to be depressive people, but they're really funny. And the reason is because they've learned that when they make a joke, they feel better. And that's what it comes down to. And there's a lot of things that make you sad, but they're actually kind of funny. You look for the funny. And that's also an appropriate emotion.
I've heard that you can feel excitement instead of anxiety, that they vibrate the same way in the body.
Yeah. I mean, anxiety, all anxiety is unfocused fear. That's what anxiety is. So fear is a particular emotion that's supposed to be episodic and intense, but we've maladapted it to the modern world. So it's kind of vague and constant because of, our job and the mortgage and Twitter and the kids, and it's awful, right? And so that unfocused fear is anxiety. And instead, if you basically say, there's five hardcore things going on right now, bring it on, then you're basically turning it into a source of enthusiasm. Some people can do that more easily than others. Some people can't. And if you can't do that, then what I recommend is that you write down the sources of your anxiety and thereby focusing them, turning it into the fear it was supposed to be, which is way less threatening, as it turns out.
I mean, it boils down to the fact that unhappiness, not necessarily a bad thing. You're channeling it differently.
Yeah. No, there's nothing wrong with unhappiness. On the contrary, if you didn't feel unhappiness, you'd be dead in a week. And the reason is because we have all kinds of emotions that we need to deal with the outside world. Emotions, once again, all they are is information. All they are is stimuli having to do with the fact that our brains are perceiving stuff out there. Some of it's threatening and some of it's unpleasant and some of it's really lovely and loving and the whole thing. And that gives us different emotions, positive and negative. We all have the same emotional palette. We have them in different intensities is the way that it works out. But once we recognize that we need negative emotions because we need to be able to react appropriately to things in our midst, then we're not going to try to get rid of them anymore. We're going to try to understand them, manage them, learn from them, grow from them. And we're not going to be afraid of our own feelings and afraid of unhappiness anymore. The greatest disservice that our society is doing to young adults today is telling them that there's something defective and psychiatrically wrong with them because they're feeling sad or they're feeling lonely or they're feeling anxious. There's nothing wrong with those emotions. They can be maladapted. They can be too strong. But the whole point is the idea that I want to get rid of my sadness. Are you kidding me? Sadness is an evolved emotion so that you won't lose your relationships, is what it comes down to, so that you'll be careful about the people that you love. If you never felt sadness, you wouldn't be afraid of telling your boss to take a hike and kicking out your spouse and flipping off your friends. And you'd be lonely and friendless is the whole bottom line on that. And that's so that, you know, sadness is, it's tough, but it's important.
I want to come back one more time to this idea that you are 60% happier now than you were 5 years ago. You've got a number of principles in your work and in your books. And one of those principles is that happiness is a direction, not a destination. And so as we think about the fact that you are now 60% happier, you are an expert, you do this work every day, you're really tuned into and good at making the sorts of changes that we've been talking about. What sort of expectations can we have for ourselves as we head into this new year? How does this evolution typically happen? Is it pounds rolling off a scale? Is it slower than that? I want to sort of manage people's expectations a little bit.
So to begin with, there's no hacks. There's only habits. You know, it's kind of like weight loss. If you do some weird weight loss technique, and it will work, but it just won't be permanent. That's the problem with yo-yo dieting. You can do a thing where I'm not going to eat any of this. I'm going to eat only that. But that's not going to work. It almost never works because those restrictive diets are unpleasant and you don't have the willpower to actually keep them going is the way that that works. Same thing is true. It's all about habits in your life if you want to make permanent change. So with happiness, you need to actually commit to living in a different way. Now that starts with the work, and the work is knowledge. The reason I dedicate myself to the science of happiness is I want people to be exposed to the science who are not scientists. That's a really, really important thing. And anybody can do the work, but you have to inform yourself. Happiness is not straightforward, and the world is lying to you all the time. And Mother Nature is lying to you, and the economy is lying to you, and politicians are lying to you double time, 8 days a week. They want you miserable. They actually want you fired up because they're conscripting you into a culture war. The world is conspiring to actually make you less happy is really, really important. So you have to do the work. You have to make yourself knowledgeable, and then you have to take the steps and behavior that I'm writing about in all my books and all my columns and saying, this is my goal. So here's a good New Year's goal for anybody who wants to get happier with a promise that you actually will get happier. What it'll be is you'll be immediately a lot happier and then a little bit happier, just like if you're going to the gym, which you got newbie gains and then little by little by little by little. If your goal becomes, I'm going to become a student of the science of happiness, there's a million places to go. Start with my column, do anything you want. It's all free, right? If you expose yourself to the science and you decide, I'm going to read about this every week, I'm going to do a little bit of reading about this every week. The books that are out there and the columns and the information and the podcasts, et cetera, you will get happier. And that's a beautiful thing to do. It's a learning goal, which is a generative, a joyful goal. It's not an egotistical goal at all. And if I'm going to learn more about happiness and I'm going to share these ideas with other people and you dedicate yourself to that, I guarantee you that you're going to keep doing it. You're not going to drop that off by February. And by June, life is going to be a whole lot sweeter. And by August, people are going to be asking your secrets.
I love it. Arthur Brooks, thank you so much for kicking off the year with us. Where should people go to find all this amazing stuff?
Yeah, arthurbrooks.com is my website, and it'll lead you to other people's websites and other people's work, what I'm doing on social media. And together, let's make a better 2024, a country and world that actually needs more happiness. And it's going to start with each one of us.
Amen to that. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much.
Before we dive into our mailbag, a very quick word from our sponsors. Did you know that women are more likely to outlive our retirement savings than men are? It's true. In fact, it's our biggest financial fear. And this savings gap is where the Parity Flex multi-year guaranteed annuity available from Gainbridge comes in. If you aren't familiar with annuities, the concept is essentially that you take a chunk of money and you turn it into a paycheck that you can start drawing on when you want to, next year or next decade. The Parity Flex multi-year guaranteed annuity caters to women's unique retirement needs. And with a guaranteed lifetime withdrawal benefit and flexible withdrawals, it's like having a paycheck for life. Plus, you'll also get guaranteed returns at 5.95% APY, making the Parity Flex multi-year guaranteed annuity the perfect complement to your existing portfolio. So who's with us? Start saving now at gainbridge.io. Visit gainbridge.io/parityflex for important information. This is a paid endorsement.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's Olly.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
And we're back. My daughter, Julia Chatsky, is joining us for our first mailbag of the new year. Happy New Year, Jules.
Happy New Year. How's it going?
You know, it's going like it usually goes the first week in January, where I feel like I kind of wish I had checked my email more over the past 2 weeks because I'm a little behind.
You and me both.
So this first question is a little different. We got a voice memo from Camille, and she said we could play it on the air. So we're going to play it on the air, and then we'll come back, we'll answer it, we'll talk about it. So you're off the hook for reading the text on this one.
Wow. All right, let's give it a listen.
Hi, Jean. My name's Camille. I'm a big fan. Thank you so much for all your amazing podcast content. It really keeps me going, and I've learned a lot from listening over the years. So I've been wanting to write into you guys really ever since I started listening, but really it's gotten to a point where I've just realized it might just have to be a disjointed voice memo because that's all I can do. So anyways, I'm 32. I've been married for about 2 years to my husband. We just had a baby in the spring. My husband is in grad school currently. He's in his last year. I got laid off my last month of maternity leave. So I have been unemployed for the last 5 or so months. So since getting laid off, I'm not saving anything, haven't been contributing to my Roth or my 401k. My husband selling, he has Tesla stock that he's been using to basically pay for life expenses while he's in school. So we're kind of relying on Tesla stock, and then I have a side gig as an artist, so I'm kind of relying on that. The income is pretty inconsistent with that. So I make anywhere from $0 to $3,000 a month. And yeah, my husband takes out about $2,000 every month from his Tesla stock to pay the bills. We recently, right before I got pregnant, drained our savings and our emergency fund on a kitchen remodel that ended up costing more than we thought. So we don't have any emergency fund at the moment. We recently sold our car, or traded to a older car. So we got about $8,000 from that. That's going to go towards just paying our bills while my husband's in school. So we don't have any car payment. We both have cars that we own. And then in terms of long-term goals, basically just trying to get ahead of the fact that we're going to have to be paying for daycare. And I'd also like to set up a college fund for our kid. I guess my questions are, as we stabilize financially, so I'm going to try to probably find a job in the new year. And then my husband will be done with school in June. So as we kind of stabilize financially, what things should we prioritize? In my mind, that's, you know, getting our emergency fund back up. The other question is, my husband, so he's got all that Tesla stock, and we're kind of wondering, like, should he just sell it all and just we can live off of that? Or is it worth saving some of that because it's been pretty lucrative for him the last however many years? We're sort of relying on food stamps and unemployment and various social services with the state. And we recently got accepted into this childcare subsidy program. So basically our childcare will be paid for as long as we meet the financial requirements. So if I were to get a full-time job, we would probably not receive those benefits anymore. As you probably know, this country doesn't make it super easy to have a new baby. It feels like a catch-22. So anyways, thanks again for your podcast and all your great episodes. I love listening to them. And I hope to hear my questions on one of the shows, maybe. Thanks again.
Camille, first of all, let me just say I am really happy that you're listening to the show, and I'm really sorry that all of this is happening to you at the same time. Sometimes it feels like one financial mishap leads to another financial mishap, which leads to another and another and another. And finally, you are just not sure how you are going to dig out and, in your words, to stabilize financially. The good news is that with your husband being done with school in June, you know your income is going to get better, and you know that your financial situation is going to get better. But you asked a couple of specific questions, and so I want to try to answer them. First of all, in terms of your job situation and having a new baby, when it comes to priorities, I love the fact that you have a business, but like many businesses, it doesn't seem to provide you with a stable income, which means it doesn't provide you with something that you can count on. And in my mind, that makes it a better side gig than a primary gig. So I would absolutely be looking for a job fresh out of the gate in January. And then I would try to do sort of whatever you can to use the income that is coming in to live on while not drawing down specifically on those retirement savings, the money that you've got in a Roth, the money that your husband has in retirement. As far as that Tesla stock goes, it is a question that I can't answer without really knowing how much it is, what it does to you tax-wise when you sell chunks of this stock. My guess is you're already looking at a pretty significant tax bill from the sale anyway. You probably want to talk to A, an accountant, and B, a financial advisor, or at least a financial advisor who's pretty good with taxes, to get some advice about when to sell off chunks of this stock, if indeed you want to get rid of it, in order to minimize the capital gains bite. It could be that now is exactly the right time to do it because your income is so low, but you need answers to those questions in order to answer the Tesla stock question. And finally, the issue about being on subsidies, the issue about relying on food stamps and unemployment and various social services, it's terrific that those programs exist, but they're not long-term solutions. They're definitely not long-term solutions for people who, as I can tell from your letter, want to be independent, want to grow wealth, want to provide a really stable, comfortable life for your growing family. So I'd say boost your income doing whatever you can. Make sure that when your husband is done with school, he's ready to do the same, and slowly roll off those subsidy programs as fast as you can without worrying that you're going to miss them long term. I think it's going to feel a lot better to be off of them than it does to be on them, and I think you're going to be just fine. 2024, as I read your letter, is looking like a much, much better year for the two of you. So I hope that's enough encouragement. Jules, did that sound encouraging?
Yeah, absolutely. I think they can do it.
I totally agree. It sounds like you have your ducks in the row. And I also want to say I loved getting this voice note. I loved getting a voice memo. And if anybody else wants to send us voice memos, that's great. We are really, really happy to run them on the air. We've got one more question today, Jules.
Our next question today comes to us from Maria. She writes, "Hello, Jean. My nephew has been in and out of prison. He is currently working at McDonald's. He is not allowed to have a checking account because of his past record. What suggestions do you have to help him be financially stable? When he cashes his check, he is charged a fee. Please help, Aunt Maria."
Well, first of all, how lucky is he to have you looking out for him and trying to help him achieve financial stability? I think that reading between the lines here, what's going on is that he has a negative record with a company called Checks that tracks past banking account behavior. My guess is that when he went into prison, maybe he left a checking account sitting there. The money got drained away because of monthly fees. It went into the negative, and his record ended up being kind of lousy. That actually often happens to people who go to prison because there's no law, there's no federal law that says that he is not allowed to have a checking account. And there are a network of institutions that will open what they tend to call second chance checking accounts for people who've come out of prison, but also just people who've had bad past checking account behavior. Some of the ones that you might have heard of are SoFi and Chime. They tend to be neobanks, which are sort of not exactly banks, but other financial institutions, fintechs that behave like banks. Credit unions are also particularly good at this. And so I would suggest that you look at both of those solutions. If there's a credit union in your local area or in his local area, have him just walk into the credit union and see if he can open an account there. Often they are just more willing to look at you as an individual, to look at you as a person rather than as just some sort of computerized record of the things that you've done in the past. But you're totally right. He needs a bank account. He needs to be able to cash his checks, and he needs to be able to cash his checks without incurring a hefty fee every single time he does it. So Google second chance banking accounts, look at credit unions, and I think that you're going to have a lot of options, certainly more than you thought going into this show. And if you've got any other money-related questions, we would love to hear from you. You can send them our way by emailing us at mailbag@hermoney.com. Jules, thanks so much.
Thanks so much for having me. Excited to be on next time.
Absolutely. We're going to take a quick break.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
And we're back with your money tip of the week. Are you in your late 50s or your 60s or even your early 70s? And have you been thinking about selling your home? If you said yes to both of those questions, now might be a good time to think about this. And there are a few reasons why. One of them is that many boomers already have their homes paid off. This, coupled with a lack of available homes for sale on the market, really short supply, and record high prices means selling now could pad out your retirement savings. If you've been thinking about it for a while, analysts say it's better to pull the trigger sooner rather than later. And that's because if a ton of boomers decided to sell all of a sudden, the prices they would get would be a lot lower than what their homes appear to be worth on paper today. Even if you're not quite ready to sell today, think about this. Many boomers are going to be selling in the coming years, and that could put downward pressure on the prices of the types of homes that they want to live in. Then by the time you are ready, it might not be such a good time to sell anymore. In other words, now's a good time to meet with a realtor to think about what your next move might be and to consider if it's time to go for it. Thank you so much for joining me today on Her Money. Thanks to Arthur Brooks for explaining how we can all work to increase our happiness in the new year and beyond. If you like what you hear, please subscribe to our show at Apple Podcasts. Leave us a review. We love hearing what you think. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Edelman Financial Engines. Her Money is produced by Haley Pascalides. This show is mixed and mastered by CDM Sound Studios. Our music is provided by Video Helper, and our show comes to you through Megaphone. Check out our new podcast, How She Does It with Karen Feinerman, for intimate cocktail party style conversations with today's most talented female leaders. This podcast is also part of the Airwave Media Podcast Network. You can find us and other shows like us at airwavemedia.com. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk soon.